Mediated conversation on SAFM.
27 minutes to 9 the time. Good morning. Time for your mediated conversation this Wednesday morning. Last week on Friday here on SAFM, we took a series of your calls about climate change and from a group of people who claim that climate change is a hoax and that, in fact the world is not getting warmer. Some people have also claimed that even if the levels of carbon dioxide and other gases are rising in the atmosphere, that doesn't matter, and that it poses no problem to our lives and to the lives of other organisms. But that view is not based on fact. Global scientific assessments say human-caused global warming is an established fact. This has been agreed to by the United Nations. So then, what are the facts? What impact is climate change going to have on us as human beings and as people living in Southern Africa? First this morning, you'll hear from Professor Mark New, Director at the African Climate and Development Initiative at the University of Cape Town. Professor Tafadzwa Maobaudi is a climate expert, also an expert on water at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. Dr. Roland Ngum is the Project Manager for Climate Justice at the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation. We start then with Professor Mark New. Professor, good morning.
Morning.
Just to explain what I'm going to do is I'm going to put all of the arguments that have come from our listeners to you and I'll ask you to reply to them. So let me start. What evidence is there that our climate is changing?
Well, the evidence is widespread from global to local scales. If we look at multiple measures or metrics of the climate, from air temperature to ocean temperature to sea level rise to melting of glaciers and ice sheets, they're all showing trends over the long term, the last 50 to 100 years, where it's unequivocal that there is a change in the climate relative to what was experienced in the preceding centuries. It's the same with extreme weather events such as heavy rainfall and dry spells and droughts and heat waves. They're all showing an upward trend across all parts of the world. So there's no doubt that the climate is changing. And we're even now starting to see impacts of climate change on nature and society in terms of, for instance, impacts of the warming climate on crop production and so on. So it's hard to find evidence anywhere that's showing that the climate isn't changing.
How can we be sure it's the result of human activity? What's the causal link between the temperature going up and humans?
Yeah, so The main driver of what we've seen up to now is our greenhouse gases, of which carbon dioxide is the most abundant and most important greenhouse gas. And the causal link is draws on multiple lines of evidence. At the most basic level, greenhouse gases are proven to trap heat in the atmosphere. Experiments in chemical laboratories show this, and their warming effect has been calculated in the laboratory, and then we can scale that up to what that means in terms of the warming of the atmosphere. But then we also know that these gases have been increasing in the atmosphere. So, carbon dioxide, for instance, has increased from somewhere around about just over 250 parts per million in the pre-industrial era to over 400 parts per million now, today, and it's continuing to go up. And we also can prove that these increased levels of carbon dioxide, the carbon dioxide that's actually increasing in the atmosphere, comes from fossil fuels rather than from natural sources. Because fossil fuels or carbon dioxide from fossil fuels have a particular chemical signature that's different from carbon dioxide from natural sources. So when you add all of that up together, we've got increases in temperature, increases in greenhouse gases. We can prove in the laboratory that greenhouse gases warm the atmosphere, and we can prove that these greenhouse gases that we're seeing increasing in the atmosphere are from human sources. So there's really no other plausible explanation for the observed increases in global temperature that we've seen.
There are various arguments that have come up. One of them is that the Earth has natural warming and cooling phases. Some people have told us that the Earth is actually about to cool down and that this is a natural phase. How do you respond to that?
Well, the Earth does have natural warming and cooling phases, and those typically happen on what we call geological timescales, from tens of thousands to millions of years. And we see that in the geological record. We know that over the last 2 or 3 million years, the Earth has gone through periods of what we call ice ages and then warm periods. And we're currently sitting in a warm period between ice ages. And it's actually this warm period that has made it possible for sort of human civilization to reach where it is today. That would have been impossible in the icy conditions that happen in between those warm periods. But the important thing is that for the next several thousand years, we're predicted to remain in a warm period and so not go into a natural cooler period. And so if we're thinking about the future of humanity over the sorts of timescales that are meaningful to us and our children, we should be worrying about the warming that the greenhouse gases are going to do to take the current warm period into an extremely hot period that makes it quite difficult for many of our societal systems to operate. So, yes, the Earth does have natural cycles, but our concern is the next several thousand years rather than the next million years, because that's essentially the timescales that human civilization should be worrying about.
So, to put it another way, it's true that when dinosaurs roamed the Earth, the world was a lot hotter, but we're not dinosaurs.
Hopefully not, otherwise we would be extinct, like the dinosaurs, at some stage in the future.
The other argument that we've heard is that carbon dioxide is what's described as a weak greenhouse gas, and that in fact it is beneficial to plant life to increase the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. What do you make of that claim?
It's a little bit of a misrepresentation of the facts in terms of it being a weak gas. So it's not as strong a greenhouse gas as, say, a gas like methane, but its effect on climate, its total effect, has been much more than all the other greenhouse gases put together, because so much of it has been emitted and it stays in the atmosphere for so long. So its net effect of a molecule of carbon dioxide is actually, even though its instantaneous effect is relatively small compared to, say, methane, its total effect, because of the amount that's been emitted and its the length of time that stays in the atmosphere, is enormous. So carbon dioxide is definitely the most important greenhouse gas and one of the ones that you should be really working hard to try and reduce emissions on. With regards to its effect on plant life, it's true that higher levels of carbon dioxide can stimulate photosynthesis, all else being equal. But plant growth is also affected by other environmental factors like temperature and water availability. So, for example, most crops in Africa are at what we call their thermal limit. If we warm the climate a little bit more, the crops are going to become even more heat stressed, and their ability to grow, even if carbon dioxide levels increase, will be reduced. So we've got to think of plants and the effects of carbon dioxide and the resultant changes in climate in a more holistic manner. And for many of us, particularly in the tropics, it's the temperature and water availability effects of climate change that are going to have a much bigger impact on plants, both sort of commercial plants as well as natural plants, than the effects of carbon dioxide on stimulating plant growth. If a plant doesn't have water, you can pump as much carbon dioxide into the air around it, but it's not going to be able to grow because it's going to be water stressed.
The other argument is that what is really affecting the Earth's temperature is the sun, and that it goes through phases, and that it is the sun that is responsible for climate change. Is there any truth in that?
Yes and no again. So solar radiation from the sun does vary on roughly 20-year cycles, which are related to what are called sunspots, which is magnetic activity on the sun's sort of interior. And when magnetic activity goes through a particular phase, then more solar radiation comes out. And then it also does vary a little bit on longer timescales, where it can go up and down on timescales of hundreds of years. But that effect is small. So we know, so scientists have shown that the sunspot cycles change global temperatures by about 0.2 degrees per cycle. And we've already seen 1 degree of warming over the last 100 years. So it essentially puts little bumps up and down in the global temperature cycle, but doesn't produce a long-term change because it just goes up and down over 20-year periods. And then the second thing is that over the last 40 to 50 years, the net effect of the sun with those slightly longer-term changes has actually been to cool the climate. Solar radiation has been decreasing slowly over the last 40 to 50 years. So what the effect of the sun has been in this period where we've seen the fastest warming is actually to offset slightly the warming from greenhouse gases. So in one sense, the effect of the sun has been almost beneficial because if the sun had been constant or increasing in parallel with the carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, we would have had greater warming than we've already experienced.
Professor Mark Neub, thank you. I really appreciate the time. Director at the African Climate and Development Initiative at the University of Cape Town. You were there, SAFM. Your mediated conversation around climate change continues 16 minutes to 9. Professor Tafadzwa Maubaudi is a climate and water expert at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. Professor Maubaudi, good morning and thank you for your time.
Good morning and thank you for having me.
What impact is climate change having on us in Southern Africa at this stage?
Well, I think we've been living through and experiencing a lot of it, mostly through the increased frequency and intensity of extremes. Recently, we just had the floods here in KwaZulu-Natal, which were quite devastating. The province is still recovering from that. Elsewhere, we are experiencing massive droughts, prolonged and intense droughts, which again are affecting livelihoods. Farmers are struggling. In the long term, you've got increasing food prices, which is driving the cost of living for people. So we are experiencing those extremes in droughts and floods, and of course, variably across the region in Southern Africa, as well as the increasing temperatures, the warming up of temperatures that we are also experiencing, which again has huge implications in terms of suitability of areas for food production, the movement or natural movements or patterns of behavior of pests and diseases, and the associated costs in terms of then managing food production in certain areas.
So you suggest that the floods in KwaZulu-Natal come from climate change. I mean, I accept what you say, but I do need to put to you that there have been floods on this scale before. The levels of rain which fell in KZN over the Easter period have in fact fallen, I think it was in the flood 20 years ago, or the flood before that. How can we be certain that these floods then are part of climate change?
So whenever there's an event, I remember I did an interview with you during the floods, and at that time, I could not confirm that it was a climate change-related event. But since then, there were studies done, which then confirmed that the floods in KZN, where the probability of the floods happening was increased by at least 50% by climate change, which then gave us the confidence to attribute the event to climate change. But in the absence of an attribution study, we wouldn't be able to do that. But that was done and that was confirmed for the floods that happened recently in KwaZulu-Natal.
You talk about these floods in KZN. Of course, KZN's a coastal city. What's going to happen in inland cities? Could they just get hotter or run out of water?
So the impacts of climate change vary across space. So in certain areas inland, it's going to get drier, which is being experienced already. We've been hearing about cities running dry, some more publicized than the others, but there are many areas in South Africa where already cities are running dry, dam levels are critically low. Because again, when you've got increasing temperatures, it affects surface storage due to increased evaporation rates. In other areas, we are experiencing increasing tendency of flash floods happening. So again, we've seen more frequency of flooding in places such as Ladysmith, Newcastle, also in Gauteng happening. We've got more extreme such as hailstorms happening outside of the normal, usual times when they would happen, and being more frequent. So the effects are going to be variable. Some places are going to definitely be wetter, but the challenge is that increased rainfall is going to come in very intense periods, which might result in localized or flash floods. In some areas, we are going to experience increasing or decreasing rainfall, which is going to increase the water scarcity in those areas. So it's about coming up with responses that are regionally differentiated and target these areas differently.
These are the dangers you pose of climate change. Some people may say there's some opportunities. Are there opportunities that come to us because of climate change?
So naturally, in anything, there are winners and losers. So there are opportunities in the sense that certain areas that used to be cooler before are going to warm up slightly, meaning that certain activities that could not happen in those areas before will now be possible to happen. Again, in some areas, we are going to have a widening of variabilities in temperatures, which again means the range of crops suitable for those areas will increase. So there are opportunities in that sense. There are also risks also to be managed, as I mentioned earlier, that in some areas we are going to, as they warm up also, it means certain pests that and diseases that previously did not exist there because the environment was not conducive, the environment might become conducive. And when you add the cost of now managing those new variables, it might make certain activities to cease being viable. In certain tourist areas, for example, you might have decreasing water levels and so forth, which would then threaten, you know, the activities that are happening there, or fishing communities will be affected by rising levels of temperatures, which have implications on water and the, you know, aquatic life systems. So whilst there are opportunities, by and large, where we are sitting in Southern Africa, there are more risks than opportunities.
Thank you very much indeed. Professor Tafadzwa Mahabaudi is an expert on climate and water at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. In a moment, your conversation on SAFM will continue around climate change with Dr. Roland Ingham. 9 minutes to 9.
Mediated conversation on SAFM.
Continuing your mediated conversation this morning around climate change, Dr. Roland Ingham is the project manager for climate justice at the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation. Dr. Ingham, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen, and good morning to all the listeners.
Is it possible to almost predict how we're going to be affected by climate change in different ways? So will the world parts, different parts of the world suffer differently? I mean, at the moment, we see huge heat waves in Europe. I would presume that this may be part of climate change as well.
Yes, Europe is burning, and the sixth assessment report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change really tells us that the Earth is generally regarded as having warmed about 1 degree centigrade since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. And there is already a high degree of certainty that we have a lot of CO2 that is trapped in the atmosphere. And this really is already causing some of the effects that we are seeing in different parts of the world. And the previous speakers mentioned that different parts of the world are going to show the consequences of this differently. In some parts, we're going to have flash flooding. In other parts, we're going to have drier weather. And in Europe, for example, you see that the entire continent almost is burning. In Southern Africa, what we have witnessed, though, recently is an increase in tropical cyclones and tropical storms. And so you have differentiated consequences, but all parts of the world are feeling this. And maybe that's why people sometimes say that there is no climate change, because some people are seeing increased rainfall, which is really beneficial to them, whereas others are feeling the heat, as in Europe right now.
Could we find then that there'll be more intense results more intense impacts in some places than others. I mean, I understand that, for example, the pole, the North and South Pole are warming more quickly than other places.
Yes, and as the North and South Pole are warming, what we are witnessing is increased water levels. In the Southwest Indian Ocean, for example, the part of the world where we are in, we're noticing already, according to the IPCC, 5 millimeter increase in water levels. And obviously, warming weather, which causes the atmosphere to trap more water vapor and all that. And the result is, on the one hand, tropical cyclones and storms, and we've seen Eloise, we've had cyclones Kenneth and Idai. And also recently, you heard from the previous speaker, the rainfall that happened in KwaZulu-Natal, which caused over $2 billion worth of damage. And the consequence, really, of the melting ice caps. And we will see a further moving southwards of the tropical storms and cyclones, because previously a lot of these phenomena were limited to further up north in the Mozambican Channel. And further west, the IPCC has also predicted that it is going to be a lot drier. And we have witnessed that through the drought that has happened over the last about 4 or 5 years, and for which countries like Zimbabwe and Namibia had to rely on food imports and food aid for parts of the countries, those countries, to survive.
How quickly is all of this going to happen? I mean, could we find it happens more quickly for a while, then slows down a bit? Is it going to happen very quickly? I mean, if you read any science fiction, you know, people say we've got 50 years. I mean, I don't know if it's as dramatic as that, but sometimes the United Nations suggests that it is.
Well, there is already a high degree of certainty that the Earth will continue to warm, but we need to cap it at 1.5 degrees Celsius, and that is what we are all trying to do within the Conference of the Parties negotiations. And obviously we need to reduce emissions by almost 50% by 2030 and reach net zero by 2050, because a lot of the CO2 in the atmosphere, and you heard this from the previous speaker as well, is already locked in. And we need to move back from the cliff edge. And the sooner we move back from the cliff edge, the faster we reduce some of these problems. Otherwise, if we continue our productivist and ecocidal nature and reliance on fossils, this is going to accelerate. And so a lot of it depends on human behavior.
Technology is moving very quickly. The idea of an electric car being widely available was really, you know, rocket science 10 years ago. Now, in some countries, that's beginning to happen. Do you think technology is going to move quickly enough to allow people to continue to live the lives they're living now, so their current lifestyle, and stop using fossil fuels at the same time?
Well, technology is really moving at a very fast pace. That is why some people already have started believing in geoengineering. At the same time, countries like South Africa are getting electricity faster, which is also helping industries here. But at the same time, we also need to realize that we cannot only rely on technologies to dig us out of the hole that we are in at the moment for two reasons. Number one, we cannot spread this technology around the world quickly enough. Secondly, reliance on technologies also means extractivism. Technologies that we need for solar panels and lithium for batteries and EVs comes from somewhere. We have a lot of destruction in the Democratic Republic of Congo to get some of the resources that we need. We are cutting down trees in places like Ecuador to get the basal wood we need for windmills and so on. And so we also need to change our behavior. A lot of it really requires that human beings reduce consumption, only rely on technologies to dig us out of the hole that we are in at the moment for two reasons. Number one, we cannot spread this technology around the world quickly enough. Secondly, reliance on technologies also means extractivism. Technologies that we need for solar panels and lithium for batteries and EVs comes from somewhere. We have a lot of destruction in the Democratic Republic of Congo to get some of the resources that we need. We are cutting down trees in places like Ecuador to get the basal wood we need for windmills and so on. And so we also need to change our behavior. A lot of it really requires that human beings reduce consumption in order for the world to really start breathing better. And you can already see that some people do not believe that we can do that, and that is why some are already trying to colonize Mars.
Dr. Roland Ngum, thank you. Project Manager for Climate Justice at the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation. My thanks also to Professor Tafadzwa Mabaudi and Professor Mark New, the Director of the African Climate and Development Initiative at UCT. A lot more to come. Kathy is next. We, of course, will see you tomorrow from Mdu, Stanza Banyana, Zelma, myself. Look after yourself. Have a good Wednesday. You're with SFM leading the conversation, not buying Man United, 9 o'clock.